So, the topic today, because of the events of the last week, I thought should probably be around free speech, and I can give you what I know about it from my own experience at Speaker's Corner, which is quite extensive. I've been speaking here since 1985. This December, I'll have been here for 40 years. So the best part of my life, two-thirds of my life, I've been speaking here at Speaker's Corner. And times have changed. We've got electronic communication, we've got video cameras, streaming, all this sort of thing that we didn't have back in the day. But otherwise, the fundamental questions about free speech remain, and I think have been reflected in what happens at Speaker's Corner. We have people from different points of view, a Christian, a Muslim, a Marxist, a conservative, gays and lesbians, anti-gays and lesbians. We've had the lot at Speaker's Corner. Pro-trans activists, anti-trans activists, you name it, we've had it. And that, for me, represents free speech. And to be honest with you, most of the speakers here who've been here over the decades, I've got to know in one way or another. I used to do a radio show, interview with them, talk to them, discuss with them. And although they'll hold views that sharply contradict my own, many of them, we will get along generally okay. Pretty much every one of the speakers here who's been here over the last 30 years or so, I've interviewed, discussed with, debated with in one way or another. And even if they have the most hostile views, I'm prepared to interview them, discuss with them, debate with them. And for me, that in essence is what free speech is about. It's about a tolerance of the right of your political opponent, your ideological opponent, your religious opponent, your philosophical opponent, your scientific opponent, to engage in discussion and debate around the ideas that they hold dear. And people change their mind. I've changed my mind over the years. Many of the speakers here have changed their minds over the years. There is no fixed formation. You're not born to be, in my opinion, of a Muslim belief or Christian belief or Marxist belief or socialist belief or Tory belief. These ideas are forged during your lifetime, and therefore they have some flexibility about them. They adjust and amend and change over the years. Now, yesterday I attended the event which Tommy Robinson organised in central London. I wanted to go along to both the Tommy Robinson event to identify the type of character, people, beliefs that people were there for, and I also wanted to go along to the counter protest. I didn't manage to make it to that because when I got there, there was a row of police blocking access to them, and there are a lot of Tommy Robinson supporters pressing up against the police lines, and therefore it wasn't possible. Firstly, on that question, I would wonder why it is the police agreed to have two counterposed demonstrations on such sharply conflictual issues in Whitehall itself. I find that a little bit odd, given the fact that only a month or 2 months ago there was a Palestine demonstration that was forbidden from going marching to the BBC and was restricted to remaining inside Whitehall, and they weren't able to march anywhere without getting arrested. And Piers Corbyn, who we know quite well, was arrested for going to the BBC at that time and presenting a bunch of flowers. And so I can't see why it is that the police would have authorised, and the Home Office and the authorities authorised, two demonstrations which were directly in conflict with each other on such sharply divided political opinions to gather in the same street. I find it most odd. And there was, of course, some conflict which broke out afterwards. The newspapers and television stations and radio stations have reported an estimated 100,000, then they changed it to 150,000. My own belief is there was something between perhaps 300,000 and 500,000 people there. It was an extremely large demonstration on behalf of Tommy Robinson and co. Extremely large demonstration. And it reflects a genuine mood with amongst certain sections of the population who are angry at migration. Now, migration, I looked at the statistics this morning, And the peculiarity is, when you look at the data on migration in the last 10 years, the biggest spike in migration followed Brexit. Now, it's quite peculiar because Brexit was clearly an issue where the population were, or the majority who voted in favour of Brexit, 52 to 48, whatever the statistic was, were clearly hostile to free movement and migration inside the European Union. And yet, after Brexit, there was this giant spike in the amount of people who migrated into Britain. And so I find that a little bit odd. Some people put conspiracies behind that. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case, but it certainly is peculiar that the main spike in migration took place after Brexit, in particular after the coronavirus events. Now, there are those who say that they're in favour of open borders. And I've always been, in theory, in favour of open borders. But at the same time, see, there is no country in the world that has completely open borders. And those countries that do have open borders, for example, for tourism, at least tourism to the extent that a huge numbers of people will go on holiday to certain locations at particular times of the year and cause enormous strain on the resources of those countries. For example, certain parts of Spain, some parts of Greece, and other holiday destinations are flooded with people at certain times of the year, and it takes resources from the local population, makes the local population homeless and suffer from economic dislocation as a consequence of that. And that's why there have been protests in Italy, in Portugal, in Spain, and other and Greece about mass migration in the name of tourism. In other words, temporary migration, which takes resources from the population. And I think, in essence, the concern about the people coming on boats to Britain has a similar type of foundation. It's the resources available to the population. You'll hear people, and I heard people yesterday, people are coming over here and they're getting their homes before we get them. The council housing's not available. Public resources are being given to migrants who come over here on boats without documentation. They might be criminals, etc., etc. That's the primary narrative around the protests at the hotels and the specific provocation for the scale of the events which happened yesterday. Then there's the question about this guy Charlie Kirk, who was killed in the United States last week speaking at Utah Valley University. Now, I do not agree with those people on the left who have taken a position. Well, he argued that having guns in society inevitably has a certain cost, and therefore he's a victim of that. I think free speech means you must be able to tolerate the views of people who are opposed to you. And that, as I said, is why at Speaker's Corner I've always advocated and defended free speech, even of those who I disagree with. So, for example, when the Posey Parker came up here to oppose trans rights, or better said, to support women's rights over trans rights, and was attacked by a number of activists who call themselves trans activists or trans anarchist activists. When she was attacked by them, I stood in between and tried to prevent them from violently stopping the meeting. When Nick Ticconi, who's the leader of UKIP and is the representative of Turning Point UK, the same organisation that Charlie Kirk is a member of, when he came to an event called Marxism, I think it was Marxism 2022, and he had an amplifier, and he spoke there challenging the people at that conference or that political meeting or that educational meeting to debate him, I went over and debated him. I'm not afraid of debating people who have a different point of view to me, even if it's completely the opposite side. And he was debating. Now, you might argue he's a Nazi, a fascist, or whatever. But he was debating, and as long as he was debating, and he had about 10 of his people around him, I'm happy to debate. And unfortunately, some people from that political meeting came over and stormed against them and started a violent clash with them. And I tried to oppose them and said to them, calm it down, engage in debate, what's the matter with you? Because democratic discussion, if you can't win a democratic discussion and debate, or you're not prepared to engage in that democratic discussion and debate, I think you're wasting your time. You're never going to be able to win people over. I was at a meeting of the new party created, or the founding groups of the new party called yourparty.uk, which was founded by Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultana. I went to their meeting on Friday night. In Brixton. There were about 1,000 people there. I was quite pleased with the audience, with a lot of young people, and so on. But Zara Sultana turned around and said, anybody who's socially conservative or has socially conservative views, in other words, doesn't agree that a man who dresses as a woman and declares himself to be a woman is a woman, then they're not welcome in this party. And I was disgusted by that, particularly because she made the point 3 or 4 times during that meeting, and she only mentioned class, I think, once. And so if you're going to talk about a socialist movement, I think you need to be clear that if you're going to have large-scale involvement by the working classes in such a movement, which if you've got, as they have, 750,000 or 800,000 people have signed up, then clearly you're going to have people of different views on issues like that, which are highly contentious issues about biology, about the position of women, about the position of sexuality, about the position of the law. All these questions are big issues about sport and all the rest of it, which you can't simply resolve by declaring some posture that we stand for this and you're not allowed. That means Christians, there's a lot of devout Christians who follow the Bible. They don't agree. A lot of them don't agree, aren't liberal Christians in the social sense, in the liberal sense, and therefore they won't support the idea of, self-identification of someone as a woman. They won't support the pronoun campaign. They won't support the issue of trans rights as elevated above women's rights, which I think is what has been happening. That's what my view is been happening. Now, I have people who are trans, I don't have any problem whatsoever with those people. I just don't think that their rights should be elevated above the rights of a woman. And that, I had debates with people. I used to think this was a sideline issue. I don't know why people are going on about it. But when I heard the people coming up here, some of whom I knew for many years ago as socialist activists in the Labour movement, were participating in the meetings here defending what they said was women's rights against the encroachment of their rights by the trans movement. I came round to their point of view and I agree with their point of view. But I could only have done that by debate and discussion. You can't come round, can't get people on your side by simply declaring we are right and you are wrong. And how do they do that? Another example of that is the issue about climate change. Now, I've been friends with Piers Corbyn for many years. I used to assume that the arguments about climate change, about CO2, man-made industrialization and pollution, are correct. I used to assume that. I didn't know about it. I assumed it because it was the type of position that I felt an affinity towards, protecting the environment, protecting nature, stopping its destruction, and could there be generic consequences which are undermining the whole of humanity. I thought naturally that that was something that I had an affinity with. I discussed with Piers over the years. I wasn't convinced by his point of view, but I did interviews with him. I debated with him. I believe, and then I followed the wider debate internationally taking place around these issues, and I began to be less persuaded by their arguments. And I certainly thought there is no room for the prohibition of argument about those questions, about the impact of certain gases on the fate of the entire climatic system of the planet. And I think that question is an open question that has not been resolved. Now, some people say it's been resolved, there is no impact. I don't know, maybe there is some impact. but I don't believe that anything that we do in Britain will make the slightest difference, apart from the sense of saying, I'm going to wear a badge, don't do this. You know, it's virtue signalling. There is nothing that Britain can do, even if the entire population of Britain only ate grass for 50 years, it would not make the slightest difference if the calculations, of the CO2 is a dangerous threat to humanity through climate change, if that were all true, if the very worst case scenarios that they present were true, everything that we were, if the whole population of Britain stopped eating and stopped using gas, electricity and everything, it would still make no difference whatsoever to what happens to the planet. That's a simple fact. And therefore it is a signal. They are saying that if you signal this, the whole of the world might copy you. That's a utopian idea, because interests stand behind the utilization of resources. And you can see that this is virtue signaling, because the very same corporations, Mark Zuckerberg's Meta, Google and so on, all of whom a couple of years ago were hysterically waving the flag for climate change, net zero company and all the rest of it, they are now spending trillions of dollars on data centers for AI, where they're not making any money out of it, consuming enormous amounts of electricity, enormous amounts of technological resources that, if they wanted to, could be used to save the climate crisis. But instead of this, according to their own criteria, but instead of this, they're spending vast amounts on profit-seeking activities, or on attempts to create profit-seeking activities to reach AGI as a consequence of their expenditure on artificial intelligence. So it is entirely falsification to say that these entities who have been promoting these ideas amongst the population, that they are telling the truth. They are not telling the truth, and they never have been.
Yes.
Now, and therefore what we do, the grassroots person, I mean, I remember when I first, as I said, when I first encountered this issue really seriously, it was around the Extinction Rebellion campaign, because they came to Speaker's Corner to Marble Arch. I think it was 2018. Suddenly there were like several camps of them in central London, and I was looking at it, what a weird demonstration. Suddenly the whole of central London was blocked by six different encampments. They all had strange flags with this egg timer on it, and they all had certain ways of behaving, orchestrated by a group that ran the network. This group, it turned out, was directly linked to some major corporate players. Paul Polman from Unilever, and Mark Carney, now Prime Minister of Canada, who was then the former governor of the Bank of England. And they were about to look, the same time they launched Extinction Rebellion, they launched something called Business Rebellion. A business rebellion was led by them. But then, because there was a little bit of kickback against that, because the followers of their campaign were a lot of young people who were trying to protect the planet and a bit hostile to the role of big business, they withdrew this and hid it. But I think there was a genuine global campaign by some corporations to elevate this Extinction Rebellion into a sort of a political arm of their own corporate green interests. And that's got nothing to do with the validity or unvalidity or invalidity of the arguments about climate change. Go on.
Thank you. Just those were my people. That was from the Reclaim the Streets, Stop the City, yes, Occupy, yes, movement. Yes. Maybe even that was orchestrated now, looking back on it, I don't know. But it felt very grassroots. There's a lot of just, I'm sure it's absolutely infiltrated. But clearly, because I came to some of the ones where they occupied up here, yeah, and everything. And it was like, it was my people.
It was a festival type atmosphere.
It was totally something. Yeah. But I remember for the first time ever, Clarissa the Vic saying how sophisticated they were, how wonderful they were, because they knew that it would take six people, six coppers, to arrest one person. We never had that before. They just thump you and just be brutal. It's like, what was going on then? Yeah. There was something very, very weird.
Yeah. So,
and it was a hijacking.
So the background to this, as far as my reading of it was, and I remember in the 1990s, early 90s, I was reading a book by a political activist from the 60s who became quite famous in America. His name was Saul Alinsky. And Saul Alinsky was a street campaigner in the 1960s, the sort of Vietnam lot, anti-war, student movement, this type of thing. And in the 1970s and 80s, many of these people got into positions of authority and power in the media, in education, in universities, in political parties, and so on. And they entered the mainstream, you know. Some people used to say there were, if you like, there was this long march through the institutions. So this idea was, first of all, there was the Maoist idea of a long march and a revolution. Once that was defeated in the 60s, this revolutionary wave, then it turned into a layer of middle-class students who gained positions of authority and power inside various institutions, particularly in academia and the media and so on. And the consequence of that was a layer of them also entered into business, became major political figures, and they could play a game with utilizing resources that they had accumulated to mobilize campaigns that they now call it astroturfing, which basically means you mobilize a campaign that looks like a political movement but actually is a corporate finance operation. Now, little hint, yesterday on this huge demonstration of Tommy Robinson supporters, most notable was the appearance of the number one figure of the day. Firstly, well, there were two figures. One figure is a guy called Ben Habib. Now, Ben Habib is a Pakistani, so a migrant to Britain. Tommy Robinson, also a migrant, an Irish migrant, or Irish migrant stock. Ben Habib, a big corporate player. And then the, if you like, crown on the day was Elon Musk turning up. So the second richest man in the world turns up at Tommy Robinson's demonstration to declare, either you fight or you
fight,
die.
Fight.
Or you die. Either you fight or you die. Now, I don't know, other than through watching X, and watching a couple of videos, I don't really know what knowledge Elon Musk has about Britain. It seems to be highly skewed. But here you have the relationship being created. And Tommy Robinson had changed his views. He was quite a militant street fighter for the far right, EDL, as it was in the past, and various other... And he doesn't deny this. He was a violent street fighter, and yet now he's been taken under the wing of the richest, or the second richest man on earth, and a multi-millionaire property developer from Pakistan, Ben Habib. Now, and therefore he turned round and said, I mean, I saw the interviews with some of the people we know from here, Street Mike, who came from the anti-lockdown movement. He is now Tommy Robinson's main videographer.
Wilsey,
who went and interviewed Tommy Robinson a number of occasions. And Louis Errington, who we saw a few minutes ago, who's at Speaker's Corner, he was also interviewing Tommy Robinson, because they might manage to galvanize and to appear to be a mass street movement of the people from below, galvanizing and appearing out of nowhere. And it certainly is true that there are such movements that appear historically, as you say, perhaps the what were the Occupy movement, the Reclaim the Streets movement,
yeah, stop the city.
Movements like that emerged from below. And of course, it is useful to them occasionally to have someone who bungs them a couple of quid to facilitate doing something. For example, in the 1990s, there was a group, a band called Chumbawamba. Yeah. And Chumbawamba had money.
They made some money
from their pop songs.
That's it.
And then they financed the creation of a centre in Whitechapel called LARC, right? London something action group, something like that. And I knew the people who were the leaders of that group. They were nice kids.
There was a Spanish kid.
There was a guy from Yugoslavia. And they were the sort of radical activists. And they gathered together a little centre, which had... In fact, I supplied them with computers myself.
Right.
I gave them the computers that they had in the late 1990s.
Yes.
Now, they also had enough money to finance the publication of free journals that they gave out. Now, of course, large entities or billionaires like Elon Musk are able to give huge amounts of resources to their favoured pet projects. So in the case of Donald Trump, they swung round to Donald Trump and gave him millions and millions or billions, hundreds of millions of dollars were given to Donald Trump, and that may well have swayed the election. I'm not saying the other side doesn't have money. It does have money by buying behind it as well.
They both do.
The Democrats
anyway.
And Republicans, in any case, are Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Yes, exactly.
But of course, the mobilization of resources by multimillionaires and billionaires to manipulate the political process is hardly a case of free speech, as they like to make out. It's hardly a case of free. Now, that Charlie Kirk guy, I saw him performing. I thought he was quite a good performer. I mean, he would stand there, go to the universities, engage in debate. He was also financed, though. The idea that that project was not a financed project, it had a lot of money behind it. And even if it started as a grassroots project, it received resources to facilitate it developing and expanding across the entire country. Now, initially, when he was assassinated, well, it is free speech, but it's the manipulation of free speech by multi-billionaires and billionaires. That's the nature of capitalism today.
If you've made money and you want to spend it, I mean, I don't buy that they're just like, you know, they're independent entrepreneurs at all. But if you've made money and you want to donate to something you care passionately about, I mean, that's free speech. That's, you know,
I don't have a problem with that. It's a reasonable argument to make that if you've got lots of money and you support one side, then you can finance that, which means you have a bought political system. You have a system in which the voice of a certain person gains millions. Tommy Robinson admitted it yesterday. On the demonstration, he said, when he spoke to Elon Musk, he said, the only reason these people are here is because of you. Because Elon Musk circulated Tommy Robinson's video and it had 82 million views.
Yeah.
That was the last time I saw. And Tommy Robinson said that yesterday. In other words, because I remember coming here in 2020 and 2019, when Tommy Robinson came to Speaker's Corner, he had 150 people with him. 150. And I went over there and challenged him. And when I challenged him, his people attacked me, knocked me off my platform. The police did nothing. And then later there was a riot at Speaker's Corner. And then he came again on the first weekend before the second lockdown. He was marched into Hyde Park by 50 police officers. He had about 150 supporters with him, 150. And this was something he announced some days before to call people here. So from a movement in 2020, able to galvanize 150 people, now we have a movement with 500,000 people. Now, there are objective reasons behind his support, but he himself said, this crowd is thanks to you, to Elon Musk. And therefore, what you're saying is, it's true. Yes, someone's got money, they can throw money where they want.
But the idea is, there is the term,
the best democracy money can buy. In other words, the best free speech money can buy. During the lockdowns, as you know, we were prohibited from coming to Speaker's Corner. People were gathering all around the park and they were free to move in and out. when we came to Speaker's Corner, the police arrested us. And they harassed us, anyone they identified as someone who wants to speak. And during that period, the whole of the so-called truth in the world was governed and controlled by a network of big tech and big pharma, working hand in glove to manipulate the entire world's population to accept the incarceration of the people of the world behind a narrative created, fostered and replicated and circulated by big pharma. That's correct. That's correct.
Definition of fascism.
So when people talk about fascism in the modern times, I do think we have to have a nuance. You know, I was in the Marxist organisations for many years, and they always used to say, fascism is the destruction of the entire working class movement, smashing the workers' movement like Italy and Germany. Of course, Germany and Italy are not the only incarnations of reactionary control over the population. The most the questions we have to deal with are real questions we're confronted with today. So one of those issues is a street movement that could destroy the working class, possibly. But the other issue is, yes, the merging of the state and corporate power to gain control over the world's population. And the lockdowns were a completely new phenomena throughout the entire world. Never before in human history have we had a power grab similar to that, which stretched its reach everywhere in the world and made claims to universal truth to spread to the population, arguing that unless you agree with the lockdowns, unless you abide by the lockdowns, unless you remain in your country, and by the way, don't forget that, they were the ones who were arguing for each country to be segregated off and separated from every other country. And so in other words, lockdowns were the creation of a new type of nation state where nobody can come in or go out. That was a new phenomenon. And it was after the lockdowns ended that they suddenly said, oh, you can have a huge migration wave. But so you're shifting from one side to the other and the population going along with it. Well, or at least a significant number of the population going along with it. Whether by will or by acquiescence, a lot of people went along with it. I asked a couple of people yesterday, you know, A lot of the people yesterday were anti-lockdown people, but a lot of them basically went along with it as well. And a lot of them would have taken the jabs and all the rest of it as well. So this idea that free speech is, you know, if you're going to defend free speech, so I tried to go around yesterday and ask people on the demonstration. I thought, well, maybe like that guy Charlie Kirk, or like Tucker Carlson, or like Candace Owen in America, maybe some of the people who were on the demonstration yesterday, I thought maybe some of them might have, how are you doing, all right? Might have been against Israel and been against the genocide in Gaza.
Get any takers?
I didn't get any takers. I didn't get any takers. I thought there might be some people. And I saw there was one guy who shouted at one of the people riding, a Jewish guy for Rebel News, but he was shouting at him from an anti-Semitic point of view, rather from an anti-Zionist point of view. And so when I did ask people about that, I was specifically going to ask people about that, and one of them told me, nobody should talk about Palestine here. And then we went a little bit further, I was with Wilsey from the GB, Resistance GB, and went a little bit further, and there was a whole crowd chanting like something like, fuck Palestine, fuck Palestine, stick your Palestine up your ass. Yeah. That was the chant. And there weren't many Israeli flags on the demonstration.
There were a few,
but there weren't many. But the overall atmosphere was this: Palestine is a lefty cause. We don't defend them. Now, if you're saying that you're calling a demonstration specifically and explicitly for free speech, then it means you must defend the right of free speech of your opponent. What else is free speech? Free speech doesn't mean my right to speak, not yours, but that's what the attitude is. So Tommy Robinson and Elon Musk, by the way, because I've got friends who support Palestine, their stuff is taken down off X. In fact, George Galloway's stuff has been taken off X. Simply something called No to NATO. So X is a mechanism by which Elon Musk the second richest man in the world, manipulates global public opinion to serve the directions and interests which he wants. And that's what we saw yesterday. He's got a megalomaniac idea, but he turns around to the British population. I mean, you talk about migrants upsetting the balance of power. Here you have the second richest man on earth declaring to the population, to the most radicalized section of the right wing, and I'm not saying everybody on the demonstration was radicalized right wing, but a good proportion, I would say 20 to 30%, the most vocal and militant of them, were radicalized right wing, who you might call fascists. Now, those people, he was speaking to them, and what did he say to them? Did he say, we're in favour of free speech? Did he say, we're in favour of democracy? Did he say, we're in favour of debate? No. He said, the left are murderers, and you must fight or die. That's what he said. So he appealed to those people to rise up in militant struggle against people who disagree with them. In other words, against people who defend the rights of the Palestinians, the national rights of the Palestinians. And these are the same people who are now saying, we're in favour, our nation has been forgotten. Well, it's an interesting phenomenon that historically...
That's the whole point of this thing, is it? It's about divide et impera, divide and rule. It's all it's about, is about whipping people up.
Yeah, I was here years and years ago with you when we got attacked by those Tommy Robinson thugs. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
You got your hat picked up and thrown off. And it was, you know, they're a barbaric bunch, a lot of them. But there's a legitimate grievance in there, isn't there, about feeling that they're second class. I mean, not second class. Second class is the rhetoric they use, but
it's very
they're not allowed to express their identity in the same way minority groups are, right?
It's very
without
difficult.
Being seen as fascist or racist or dismissed. And their concerns about immigration are not listened to. They're sort of dismissed as racist bigots every time they bring up what's quite legitimate, right? So they've become more extreme thanks to the liberal left, I would say.
The liberal left is exactly...
The traditional Marxist or anarchist kind of left, but the left that's the kind of liberal centre, you know, they...
Yes, I think where that has come from is the decline in the militancy of the labour movement in the West. So you don't have many strikes, demonstrations and protests by workers. That's partly a change in the economic demography of society. Large-scale industry has generally been moved out of the advanced capitalist countries. The working classes have tended to be more atomized, small-scale work bases linked together by modern communications and therefore segregated from one another. There are some large work bases, Amazon and things like this, the NHS, but otherwise there aren't these large conurbations, the Ford factories, the mines, the steelworks, where traditionally the working classes gained a consciousness of their role in the global system through the importance of their work and the sense of the importance of their work to the entire process of the functioning of society. And because those industries moved elsewhere in the world, towards China, India, parts of Africa, South America, and elsewhere. It can be deliberate, but it doesn't have to be deliberate. The demographics
but it
and
was
the
deliberate.
But the movement of economic activity is a capitalist flow. It moves on a moment by moment basis. You can crush an economy simply in a few seconds of betting on the nature of that economy, on the fate of that economy. So, for example, Indonesia has low wages, but in 1998, Indonesia, which is a perfect area to shift your economic activity to, the economy of Indonesia completely crashed. Now, that's not generally in the interest of the capitalists who are there making money at the time.
The big point about it.
What is the big point?
So it's like, for example, the miners' strike. Was that all about economics? Was that all about making the best?
No, absolutely not.
It was about crushing the very power that you were talking about in the working class.
Yes.
It was absolutely catastrophic for economy. But they didn't give a shit about that. They put forth their views. That's what's going on a massive scale.
That is true.
In that heyday you're talking about, those workers were still very concerned about immigration. there were still.
Also true.
I mean, if you're talking about the 50s, 60s, that kind of golden age of the labour. Well, that was the rhetoric. Again, I don't know how even true that is, but. Are you sure this is. You're being very economistic. You're not looking at the cultural factors here. They're just as important, right?
I think you're correct. There are
even if we brought back a booming labour movement, we'd still have these cultural problems and clashes between cultures.
In Karl Marx's time, they brought in Irish labour to attack the English workers, and the English workers protested against that. And he spoke about this. He wasn't turning around and saying, oh, let an open border. The open border idea is a kind of utopian conception pushed by a section of the left since the 1960s, which connected in
it's
their
interest.
Let me finish. Which connected in with the interest of global capital.
Do you support that?
As global capital pushed its global parameters, we had things coming from every corner of the world. A few years back, it wasn't long ago, before Brexit and before the COVID crisis, the pound shop had a huge range of goods available. Every type of tool you wanted to get, you could buy in the pound shop. Every type of little, you know, these were full. Like the little Indian shop in the corner where you go to now and he's got 2,000 products. Pound shop had 3,000 or 4,000 products. Huge number of diverse products. And if you go to some countries, Italy, for example, or Spain, the Chinese shops there still have these type of products. Whereas in Britain, we don't. The globalization process meant globalization of movement of capital, globalization of flow of goods. Which also, during a period of boom in the economy, so up until 2008, it appeared to be progressing. And therefore, the European Union was looked on positively, the expansion of movement of travel was looked on positively, no one was complaining about tourists coming to their country, no one was complaining about tourists going around the world. And no one was complaining about migration into Britain on any significant scale.
They did, absolutely they did.
But nothing like what we've got today. The crisis of migration. I mean, look, America, the United States of America, they're hunting down migrants now, right? Hunting them down like criminals for being
illegal,
migrants.
Illegal
they
migrants,
are doing that. Well, they call them illegal. They're not necessarily illegal. They're simply arresting people who they think are illegal, right? Now,
don't forget,
America is a nation of immigrants.
Are we in it? Are we in it? Every nation. That's an attitude.
Every
nation is a nation of immigrants.
They're all immigrants.
We are all migrated out of Africa. How many thousands of years? Tens of thousands of years.
That's a long, long time ago. That's a long, long time ago.
I'm sorry.
But America, no, it's not an empty
platitude. We're a nation of immigrants. Name a country that isn't. Name a country that isn't.
Kyle, that's not correct.
Maybe South Africa, where I'm from, is a native population. They've been there 60,000 years. Maybe they're the only one.
I understand you can put it in a global historical context, which is also not wrong. But to put it in a modern context, America is a nation of immigrants. America is a nation of modern immigrants, not ancient immigrants. Modern immigrants.
We're retreating now. Your point is retreating back.
No, it's not retreating back. I'm pointing out that the economic relationship between the attitude to migration and the attitude to hostility migration is directly connected together. In the 1950s, it was Enoch Powell.
And the labour movement was doing great.
Hang on.
So it's not about economics,
it was
clearly.
Enoch Powell.
In the 50s, they were
who
great.
Who was going to the Caribbean and inviting people from the Caribbean to come to England. At that time,
absolutely.
I mean, when I was a kid,
somebody
used to talk about Nick Noggs and the blacks and the chappies and all the rest of it. That was all in the language.
Of course,
but as the economy was expanding, gradually, there was more and more integration.
No, you had the race riots in the 60s. Notting Hill race riots.
We did
terrible
have
tension
race,
in Britain.
We did have race riots, but they were overcome by them.
I think it was that there was
now,
a community.
So the issue is how, you know, immigration to this country, if there was zero immigration from tomorrow, if it was like during COVID, you imagine the conflicts would disappear in society?
No,
they would simply shift to another issue. They would the conflicts about housing exist
so how,
regardless
how
of
much,
migration.
If not zero, how much migration are you happy with? I'm curious.
I'll come on to that in a minute.
I'd be happy with 100,000 a year, personally, coming in. Not a million every year.
How do you know how many?
Is that a kind of radical position? Am I far right for saying that?
What are the...
committed communists saying that?
Most of the migrants coming to Britain, who are they? Most of the migrants. like 50% of them are, more than 50. I saw the stats this morning.
Well,
I can't remember exactly.
Some people on the
who are they? Hang on, who are they? No, they're students.
Which is,
well, half of the migration to Britain is students.
Real students?
Yes, they're students. They go and pay at university to study here. £16,000 a year.
I think they should be asked to stay afterwards.
I don't know about that.
I saw the data this morning.
Do you think they should be asked to stay afterwards?
You trust the ONS now? I mean, it's what you got to go on, by. I understand that.
He has to get his stats from somewhere.
I agree. You got to work.
You can't just go on like four.
But the issue that people are concerned about.
Listen to Simon.
Is
Elmer.
The people getting? I've read Simon Elmer.
I know.
I've read it. But I don't agree with it.
Yeah, but
I have a right not to agree.
You,
with it.
You agree on certain ethical principles, which I think you.
Oh no, this is a decent one.
But in terms of the statistics, he's very, very informative.
But I'm giving you the stats.
How much migration?
So you won't dispute these stats.
How much migration would you feel comfortable passing away?
The issue is not migration. The issue is people are saying people are coming illegally on boats.
You're deflecting.
No, I'm not deflecting. Nobody in Britain is turning. All those people yesterday, you asked them, they're all saying, I'm not opposed to legal migration. They're all saying that.
And yet that's right? The biggest...
Actually, they are opposed to that.
They'd like to bring it right down to a normal level that it was in the 2000s when I came here. When it was tens of thousands, maybe 100,000.
As I said, the main...
Is that racist, bigoted?
The main migration...
Well, I just think...
The main wave of migration took place...
The left has to confront this, honestly, and not make it an issue for the right to...
Let me try and explain what I'm saying. You're putting up a characterisation. I understand why.
Answer the question, please. How much would you be happy...
What is the question?
Well, how much migration yearly, net migration, would you be comfortable with?
How many students...
Doesn't matter what the legal, normal migration...
Students. Well, firstly, I will come on to the answer to that.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
My answer is straightforward. I don't have a view. I don't have a view on it. I'm not saying you couldn't put a number on it, but I don't have a view on
it. Okay, fair enough.
That's it. I haven't got a number.
That's fair enough.
I haven't got a number. I can't. I could probably think up something. If I was Prime Minister of England, I could probably think up. I don't have a number. Right. Firstly, students are the number one migrants into Britain. Should there be more students?
Probably,
perhaps.
Yes.
Should there be less students?
Well, universities are collapsing.
I don't know. I don't know. Should there be more students at university from Britain? Yes. The main thing is, and I remember when my brother was at university a couple of years before me, foreign students got free tuition. Foreign students and got grants. Yeah. Foreign students. Anyone could come here and study at university in the 1970s. In the 1970s. The
golden age, right?
And there were protests when the right for foreign students to study here for free was removed. And in fact, in some countries, in Germany, for example, you can still study for free. Or basically, for a couple of hundred euros a year. When I studied in university, I got a grant to study. They paid me to study, rather than me pay to study. Now, my sons, they take £9,000 a year to study at university.
That's right.
And they didn't get £9,000 worth of services for that. They didn't get it. So the universities became corporate institutions making money. And they gamble on the property value of the universities. They've turned into a corporate activity tied to big corporations, which of course connects in with things like big pharma, big tech and all the rest of it. Now, so who is gaining? And this is the issue where Elmer is right, but I disagree with his orientation on the question. But the question is right. It's basically a global corporate campaign to mobilise resources where they want to and to move people blindly in those circumstances. And by the way, of course, it is true. It's not a deflection. It is true that the countries where people come from on boats, those people are coming on boats, they're nearly all countries we've blown up or occupied. They're not only those countries.
I think we should take a lot more refugees. I think we should take a lot more refugees. The stuff we've done to Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, I'm all for that. We should be taking many more, considering the damage Britain did to those places. But that's a separate thing from legal migration. It's a separate problem.
But illegal migration is what the protests have begun about. The whole thing is about people coming on boats. That's what they're screaming about. They're not screaming about Indians working or Filipinos working as nurses. They're not screaming about that. They're not. It doesn't mean that isn't subterranean. That doesn't mean that subterranean in their mind they're seeing more foreigners,
well,
and they're not
they're
identifying who's and therefore the hotels become the issue. And then there's the question.
That's the focus.
Then there's the question
the propaganda
about the manipulation of those views, the manipulation of those views about hotel migrants coming and attacking girls or whatever else.
So the slogan,
protect our children. Well, I remember being at school in England when it was legal to carry out corporal punishment. The school was run based on corporal punishment. Me too. Wonderful it was.
You didn't get enough, either of you. They should have beaten you even more, you two.
A friend of mine a friend of mine went to a public school, and it was run by a paedophile.
Wake you up!
The Catholic Church, in huge parts of the country, and in Ireland, and in America, was riddled with paedophiles. The care home systems in Britain,
the care home systems in Britain,
in the 1970s and 80s, were abused by paedophiles.
Yeah.
There were famous cases where senior political figures were exploiting the position of these care homes in order to abuse children. But the main focal point for Tommy Robinson and his crew is the Rotherham rape gangs and so on. Which is all legitimate. But it's not as though these rape gangs and abusive, sexual abusive groups haven't existed throughout the whole of British history in modern times. The second thing is, the abuse of women tends to, or rape of women, tends to happen inside family or inside community. The abuse of children is primarily carried out by people who are family members or are known to the people who abuse them. So to elevate the rape gangs, although it's horrific and terrible stories, to elevate that above the idea that there is paedophilia in society, which is being carried out by family members and by friends and associates, this is ridiculous. If you're really opposed to paedophilia, then you need to elevate the position of women, provide better facilities for children, provide education, welfare, housing, and improve the lot of the working classes. This is where the left has failed, because the left abandoned campaigning for the working classes and began to adopt liberal, woke ideas as a substitute for trying to win over the working classes. And they imagine, by drawing together a coalition of the lesbians, the gays, the trans, ethnic minorities, that they would somehow coalesce together groups of people who they could elevate to raise as so-called role models for the rest. And those role models would then be able to win over a coalition of people, a rainbow coalition of people, you might say. So the ecology movement, sexual liberation movement, all these type of things, which ultimately, particularly in times of economic stagnation or economic crisis, is going to alienate the indigenous working classes, who feel that their rights are being encroached on, as you're saying, that their position is being taken away. And, you know, in the early 1980s, I remember a friend in Brixton, he used to come down here, Philip Holland, used to come down here. Maybe mid-1980s. He applied for a council flat, got one. That was how it went. My brother was at university in North London, or North London Polytechnic. They got a council flat. Basically, the council said, anyone wants a council flat, come down and queue up. And they came down and queue up, and they gave them out one after another to students at that time. Because they were building housing, they were building facilities. And then, of course, the promotion under Thatcher of privatisation without investing in new resources and of private landlordism meant that it became very difficult for people to get housing. Now many people are students or whatever, they don't even, they leave university, go back to their mother and father. Yes. They can't get on so-called property ladder, and the property ladder became the main thing rather than the housing. Now, one of the few things the Labour Party is about to do that is good is to take away Section 21 that allowed them to kick people out of their homes. But it's a minor, well, it's significant. It's still, nevertheless, a minor little legal reform. What they need to do is build millions and millions of homes for the people. And once you build millions and millions of homes for the people,
they're not
going to
do that.
I'm not saying they would do it. I'm saying what needs to be done is to build millions and millions of homes.
You're missing the point.
What's the point?
It's not a supply.
How do you house people without building homes?
It's way worse than that.
How do you build homes for people?
Yeah, well, you've got to first...
Housing.
Yeah.
What?
So firstly,
what's way worse?
You've got to see what's going on.
What is it? Housing.
Let me speak, and I'll tell you. So
you're going to jump to something else.
No. Well, it's the more significant thing.
Housing.
Look, if you see who's in charge of the housing, who runs the economy, that's where you need to look.
Private landlords.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not just private
landlordism.
But if you've seen I'm talking about what's the driving all that's going on.
It's economic inequality.
In housing, it's all things. So there's an agenda here. There's an agenda.
Housing you're talking about.
That's part of it. That's part of it. But it's all,
You're just not interested.
Before you're
talking about subject matters.
I wish I had a cane.
To go from one to the other. Exactly. Those of us who are used to that, we'll behave properly.
Well, you know, parents are still allowed to.
Go to the back of the class.
Parents are still allowed to do that.
You like that.
You see, to be fair, Martin, you will admit that in the back of your mind, when I'm standing up here and speaking, you've got, but he's ignoring the agenda, isn't it?
The agenda.
Well, that may well be going on, but what is the specifics of the agenda in relation to? So I'm saying to you, in relation to housing, if you've got more, say they're constructing 300,000 homes a year, right? Council homes a year. Then the fact that some refugees are getting housed above and getting higher points on the waiting list than others, if you also got a home, you wouldn't be so bothered about it, right? You wouldn't be so bothered about it.
You wouldn't be so bothered about it. You're very Marxist, you're very economistic. You bring everything back to
you. You need that as a foundation.
I'm familiar with historical materialism. I'm all for it. But you're ignoring the cultural factors here. People oppose mass immigration, the kind we have now. They come from right across the class spectrum. It's not just these kind of yobos who go to Tommy Robinson demos. It's not that image you have in your head. It's right across the spectrum.
Why?
These are people who have all kinds of access to housing and people who don't. And in the 1960s and 70s, there were some of the worst race riots you've seen in the UK. And it was a time when, like you said, it was very easy to get a council house. Much easier than it is now.
Why?
There's a cultural dimension you're ignoring here.
So why?
And you're too frightened to do it. You don't want to address the cultural tensions that arise from the kind of society we have. You don't want to address it.
So if those cultural tensions have always been there, why do they rise and fall?
Well, I'd say they get worse as you... Look, I'm all for...
Hang on. That was a simple question.
I do need to premise...
I'm sure you can answer.
I will answer, because it's such a sensitive question.
I have to premise it
for a second. I believe in a world without borders.
Hold on a second. I want to hear your answer.
I will answer.
Because he's not dealing with that question. Why do attitudes change?
I will answer. Promise you. It is to do with immigration, but I need to premise this.
Why do they change?
This is a sensitive answer I'm going to give.
Why do they change?
Look, just need to premise this quickly. Say, I believe in a world without borders. I believe in even a world without races and no colour, like everyone's colourblind. I would love to see it, but it takes a long time. Hold on a second.
Who's arguing?
I know you're not making that point. You're not against that either.
So what's the point?
I believe in a world with everyone mixing in diversity, but you can't have it too quickly. It takes a long time. It takes maybe hundreds of years before we get to that point.
Why? Because it's a determining factor.
Because there's a nation-state principle which is very deeply embedded. Not myself, I'm an internationalist, but most people, 99% of people, are built around nation-states. And if there's a huge number of migration coming very quickly, which there has, in a way that's off the scale in British history, by the way, off the scale,
absolutely.
The numbers are off the scale.
Absolutely.
That's going to create cultural tension, which no matter how much council housing you provide, no matter how many good jobs, no matter how much union strength you have,
thing I don't
because
know.
Because look at Scandinavia, look at Denmark. I'm giving you an example where you have a very high welfare state, strong unions, strong social solidarity, and yet there's massive cultural tension. Yes. And you're ignoring that. Because you're too conditioned, you're too frightened to
address
it.
You're ignoring the global...
Because it's happening too quickly. It's happening too quickly.
Let me address.
Do you see the point I'm making, though? Do you understand the point I'm making? Go on, I'm listening. Thank you for letting me speak. I want to listen.
You're saying I'm economistic. So let's look at the biggest migration in the world at the moment. The biggest migration
within China
for 30 years is in China.
Yeah.
You think these migrants are treated as the same? You think the Chinese in Beijing think the Chinese from Hunan are the same? Or the Chinese from Xinjiang
are the same? There's all kinds of
or the Chinese from Shanghai are the same? Or the Chinese from Guizhou are the same?
I'm sure there's
they
all
don't.
Kinds of,
yeah. They don't have the same accents.
Different language.
They don't speak the same language in terms of their dialect. And there are ghettos of these people. And these people are migrant workers. They come to the cities in hundreds of millions every year. Hundreds of millions.
It's incredible.
Hundreds of millions.
It's a huge
The
amount.
Biggest migration in human history is happening now in China. The biggest migration, outstripping all the rest of the world's migration. Right?
It's massive.
And yet, there is almost no racial tension or tension between the people. It's not there's none. There is. And a lot of people are bloody, they're inferior and all the rest of it. And in Hong Kong, for example, where the mainland Chinese now can go and visit, you saw these huge riots. They shouted out, the Hong Kongers shouted, "We're British." That's what they shouted out. "We're British."
Really?
That's what they said.
It's kind of cringy.
Chinese out. Chinese are dogs. That's what they said.
It's very cringy.
That's what they said. I got an uncle in Hong Kong, I'm half Chinese. My uncle in Hong Kong, I went to visit, 1989, I went to visit, I stayed with him. He took me, he said, "Let's go for dinner." It was Sunday. I went for dinner with him, my girlfriend at the time. We went for dinner. And I thought we were going to go for a big splash. Hong Kong, very famous for dim sum, really good Chinese food. I thought we were going to go for dinner there. Did we go for dinner there? No. We met in the horse racing club, and he goes, "You've got wonderful Yorkshire pudding and roast beef.
Better.
And as he said this, his face turned from Chinese into an Englishman. Turned from Chinese into an Englishman. And Hong Kong was ruled at that time by the British. And the ruling elite in Hong Kong believed they were British. And a couple of years ago, there was the Liberate Hong Kong movement.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a big story in the news today. Hong Kong, political prisoners, all these people.
Yeah.
You know, they set fire to people who were poured petrol on them and set them on fire if they opposed them. Some old boy, they set him on fire. They threw rocks and Molotov cocktails in order to say, "We are British. Donald Trump, liberate us." That was the campaign in Hong Kong. So how deluded people can be about what their national identity is. The British people will all turn around and say, I say the British people.
What do you mean by that?
That's a mistake. The Tommy people we saw yesterday, with the flags and so on, they'll all turn around and say, you know, Britain, no migration, we don't support migration, immigrants, all the rest of it. And yet Britain, face it, is the number one country for migrating in the world. I think I could be contradicted, but I don't think so.
It's pretty good.
I think the British are the number one migrators.
We're one of the most tolerant societies.
Not only are they the number one migrators, but like they've created entire countries which are dominated by their descendants. Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong back in the day. India they occupied and then they left later on. North America, parts of South America.
You're creating that kind of colonization, what's happening now.
The Caribbean. I'm pointing out.
You're going down a dark road there.
It's not a dark road. No. These are the realities. And the problem is, yes, consciousness requires historical understanding.
You're echoing what they said at the rally. There was a guy who got up and spoke and said, "We're being colonized by our former colonies." That's what he said.
Well, he's
is that
right.
Something you believe?
He's right in the sense that people are coming to Britain.
Are you saying they're colonized?
Not colonized. coming to Britain from the colonies, which used to be dominated by Britain.
I'm from South Africa.
Because global capitalism, global capitalism creates these waves of migration. If you think people in Africa, a continent of enormous beauty, a continent of enormous natural wealth, you think those people want to leave Africa to come to England?
No, exactly.
They want to come to England to sit in the shitty rain in September. They want to come to England because the economic condition of Africa is fucked. That's why they want to come. Is that Marxist hysteria? Is that economism? It's simple fact. It's simple fact. Now, I did an interview with a friend of mine from South Africa a few years back, and a lot of people came on there and said, oh, the South Africans, they're coming over here, all this sort of thing. And he said, okay, if you want to stop migration from South Africa to here, you wait in a few years' time. And by the way, I think there's a harbinger of that in what we saw yesterday. If British society is dragged into a race war, as some of these people want to do, and which Elon Musk and co. are promoting, and which Donald Trump and co. are promoting, and which the so-called far right across Europe are promoting. If they want to drag our societies into racial warfare,
religious warfare,
then of course the middle classes, the well-to-do working classes, they will say, well, I've got a British passport, I can go to Mexico. I've got a British passport, I could go to South Africa.
You're doing what about
I got a British passport, I could go to Australia.
I've got an Israeli
it's
passport.
Peaceful, it's quieter there, I can live better there. So they get on the plane, they say, I better go there fast before the others do. Just as some of you will know, people, before Brexit, they said, I'm going to stay in Europe. I'm going to make sure I got a European permit to stay so I can live over there in Spain, in France, in Italy. And they've even got TV shows.
They're driving inflation.
I mean, they don't have that in Afghanistan. A television show. Buy a house in London. Do it up. Settle there. They don't have TV shows like that in Afghanistan or in Sudan or in Nigeria. But British television is full. In the afternoon, you turn it on. It's buy a house in Italy. Do it up. Buy a house in Spain. Do it up. The newspapers, buy a house in Guatemala, buy a house in Mexico, find a new place to live, find a place to retire. So the idea, the people migrating here, what it is you're saying is the cultural difference. Well, I tell you this, Islamic fundamentalism was fostered by Israel, America, and Saudi Arabia.
It's absolutely right.
And MI6.
Absolutely right.
Sorry?
MI6. Yes.
And MI6 and the British. They fostered it. Bin Laden was financed and supported by the Western powers, possibly, and MI6. And then when they blew up Afghanistan and destroyed the use, Afghanistan, you look, 1970s, hippie trail. There used to be a bus advertised in the free newspapers. Take the hippie bus from London through Afghanistan, through Iran, down to Pakistan, and smoke dope all the way and dance and make love. That's what they used to be advertised in London. Look on the videos on YouTube. You'll find it. Afghanistan, Afghan coast, the 1970s. Then came all the reaction. Pakistan, I've been to Pakistan. You go up the mountain in Pakistan, you come to a place called... Murray up the mountain, top of the mountain. It's an English enclave. They still serve English tea, Lipton tea, cakes. They still serve that there. It's all English enclave, former colonial enclave, top of the mountain. Look out over how the British colonialists used to. You go a little bit further up into the mountain where Bin Laden was hiding. I went up. It looks like Switzerland. It's beautiful. Looks like Switzerland. Snow, peaks, beautiful pine trees. And then you come to these little villages. And the villages are a bit run down. They got coffee shop facing out over the mountain. And they got signs up there. Walls ice cream. Walls ice cream.
Sorry, what's this village called?
And it used to be the hippie trail.
I'm gonna go there.
They all used to go there and buy hashish, hashish, fresh hashish, or opium. And they used to sit there smoking their heads off, living in the hippie trail in the mountain there. And there are remnants that there you can see there. That is the Taliban land. That's where the Islamic fundamentalists have been created by the actions of the West. These countries, Afghanistan, you'll see the images in Afghanistan, in the big cities at least, they used to have mini skirts and disco dancing in the 1970s. In Pakistan, a Benazir Bhutto, don't forget, she didn't even wear the scarf half the time. Benazir Bhutto. So the idea that these countries have a cultural affinity to Islamic fundamentalism is false.
I agree.
It's false.
Agree.
There was no cultural affinity. As with all, and here you come to the economics again, as the economies grew, as the living standards improved, gradually the Islamic fundamentalism disappeared, except in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and
that's, a unique case. The Wahhabis, this is the same as the Elon Musk game, the Wahhabis manipulated the whole Middle East, in fact, in conjunction with Israel, and they gave more, they promoted more the Wahhabi ideology than the Soviet Union used to promote its ideology.
Yes.
They spent billions on promoting this idea, but still they got no support until such time as they declared they're in a holy war with the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. And then they financed with the CIA, with Israel, and the Mujahideen, and all the rest of the Allahu Akbar murderers.
Funded by the CIA.
Funded by them. The tunnels were built by them. Yeah. The campaigns were run by them. There are even people who believe that Israel was behind 9/11 and all the rest.
Well, of course, there are even, leaving it open for a heckle.
Yes, of course. So the point being that Islamic fundamentalism wasn't a creation of the nature of Pakistani people. It wasn't something that emerged because of the nature of people who came from... I mean, my father's from Malaysia. You go to Malaysia, they got bars and drinks and alcohol there. You go to Morocco, you can go and drink there. You go to Pakistan even. I stayed in a hotel there. You got in Islamabad, the guy's running the hotel. Every 2 seconds, he's having a tipple of whiskey. It's worse than you. Every 2 seconds, he's drinking the whiskey and drinks it under the table like that. And in fact, some of them like that, the secret thing. Then they go and stay in a hotel, or they ask their Christian friend to go and buy some alcohol. They sit there drinking alcohol. And if they're not drinking alcohol, they're smoking dope or taking heroin. So the idea that, oh, they're so aesthetic, and they don't... And you go to Lahore, you say they're all... Women are all covered up. You go to Lahore, next to the Red Fort, which is one of the holiest sites in Pakistan, next to the Red Fort in Lahore, there's an entire district, again, looks like hippie trail, entire district, where the women are dancing around, having sex and prostituting themselves to large gangs of men. And then elsewhere in Pakistan and in Afghanistan, there are large areas where they get the boys to dress up as girls and stick it up their backside.
You sound like Tommy Robinson.
And
now.
So the idea...
You sound just like Tommy Robinson.
Because I'm saying the Catholic Church has done that as well.
What about the idea
that the people in these countries are somehow fundamentalist cultural... You know, it's not true.
You tied yourself in a knot there.
How do I tie myself in a knot?
All the stuff you mentioned about boys getting dressed up and... like
that's well known. It's well known. In fact, the British army knew very well about that and did nothing about it. Right? Nothing about it. So the idea they're so concerned about these issues, it's not true. And it isn't when these people, when these...
Kosovo Liberation Army.
Kosovo
Liberation Army. That's what
they're saying.
You're a bit late.
Fuck you.
KLA.
The British funded them too.
The KLA was a Maoist organization. You don't even know what I'm saying.
The British funded them too. KLA was a Maoist organization.
Then, because they got involved in the heroin trade, they got financed.
Hey, you're in England now.
Hey.
Get your shit out of here now, I said. Get your shit out of here now. Get your fucking shit out of here. Get your shit out of here.
Don't like
get your fucking
you
shit out of here.
You get
no, you get
you
out of here.
Go away, you don't like
someone. Fuck you, mate. Fuck you. Fuck you. Get your shit out of here. Come on. Come on. Get your shit out of here, I said. I don't fucking care, bro. Get your shit out of here. Get your shit out of here.
Get out of here. You don't like it.
Get your shit out of here now. Get your shit out of here.
You don't like it.
You piece of shit. You piece of shit. The world knows what you fucking stand for. The world knows what you stand for.
No way.
The world knows what you fucking stand for.
He's allowed to express his flow.
Yeah? The world knows what you stand for. Yes, the world knows what you stand for. Yes.
Go away.
Yeah? You piece of shit.
Turn around. Go away.
You piece of shit.
You get out of here. No one wants you standing around here harassing me.
No, I'm not brothers with them.
The KLA was funded by the British. You got to read Mark Curtis. Mark Curtis, the British funded the KLA.
I can't be brothers.
I didn't know that's
what they did with the drugs.
I can't be brothers with him.
And became Islam.
I've served it to my people.
Pro-Western Islamic pro-NATO force, you know. So this idea. And that's the point.
No one knows about the 6 years.
No one knows. These organisations change. It's illustrative of what we're talking about. The way in which money buys the campaigns and manipulates the campaigns. It could be a war, it could be a political group. If the go away.
Fine, I'm actually proud of this plan. It's a Christian country. You're Ukrainian.
You're ashamed.
You're Ukrainian.
Don't go.
You're not ashamed. So what are you going to do?
You should be ashamed to have that in your hand.
Go away. You don't got any positive contribution, mate. Go away.
No, I don't need to go away.
You don't have to tell
someone.
You go away. You're the one causing ructions here. No one else. We're debating. You're behaving like an idiot.
Look what they did to Bosnians.
Don't do it. Look what they did to them.
Look what they did to them.
You want to fight? You don't need to do that now. What's the point?
You're going to be ashamed of yourself.
Go on, turn it on him. Turn it on him. You're on camera.
So what?
You want to start a fight again?
So I'm not fighting. I'm going to be ashamed of having his hands.
We defend free speech in Speaker's Corner.
Good.
You don't believe
I defend free speech too.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. What I don't defend, what I don't respect.
What
I will never respect is neighbors killing neighbors, and they were killing their neighbors. So shut up.
You can't say what he wants to say. That's what you're saying.
Who is all that shit? Neighbors killing neighbors. The only ones that are killing neighbors. This is the bloody Ukrainians.
Can I ask you a question?
This is the truth.
I've asked enough questions.
The point was about, from the beginning of this talk, I was speaking about free speech.
What is free speech?
Is free speech bought by specific interest groups?
It's a dog whistle.
Is what we're seeing yesterday a reflection of that? In the fact that at Speaker's Corner, Tommy used to come down here with 150 people, and now he's got 500,000 people, and he's financed by Elon Musk, the second richest man in the world. So clearly, there are people who are manipulating and buying politics to organise their own interests and turn one group against another. That does not deny that they're playing on legitimate interests. After all, when Adolf Hitler mobilised the German people, you don't think they're legitimate grievances he was talking about?
Is this the Reichstag?
Of course he had legitimate grievances. Not the Reichstag fire.
When they killed Charlie
Adolf
Kirk.
Hitler, yeah, it's the Reichstag when he mobilised the German people, he had perfectly legitimate grievances. The Germans were mistreated in the Versailles Treaty. Yes. They were shat on by the Western powers. They seized territory from them. They starved the people of Germany. Of course, they had legitimate grounds to complain.
The
issue is, how do you utilise legitimate grounds to complain to mobilise and whip up support to crush your opponents and prevent their right to speak and say what they stand for? And the way that happened in Germany, by the way, was that until the 1928 or so, Adolf Hitler was mobilizing on the streets. He went to jail. He was mobilizing on the streets. He didn't get that much support. The support was swinging behind the communists and the left of the Social Democrats. After 1928, when the economic crash happened, suddenly the millionaires, Krupp, the arms dealer, Thyssen, the steel magnates, Siemens, the electronics giants, they suddenly threw money at Adolf Hitler. There's a famous picture. Adolf Hitler stands like this, and he's got his hand behind him, and the millionaires are throwing money in his pocket. That is what's happening with Tommy Robinson.
Elon Musk is the
That's what's happening with Tommy Robinson. He's becoming an agent of the multi-billionaires who control the world and will utilise his position to serve their interests.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Icahn? You're right about the motivations of the speakers. I think you're right. They have this nefarious agenda, was the word you used, right? Funded by the millionaires. I'm asking you, why do you think so many people came to the rally? And I have to...
Precisely, it's a bit of a legitimate...
There are, right? And the left, as leftists, right? I don't know how many here identify that. They need to address this, right? The fact that on the left, we have suppressed free speech for a long time. You look on the university campuses...
It's never been free speech.
No, hold on a second. Remember when the pro-Palestine camps were set up in American, very elite universities in America, and they got shut down, those camps? But that's exactly the kind of thing those leftists were doing to right-wing students. Now a lot of those people going to that rally for Tommy Robinson, they have got that in the front of their mind, and we have to admit, on the left, we have a problem with that, with free speech.
I'm not denying that.
Many leftists, they don't agree with what you just said.
I was at a meeting with Zara Sultana.
He's been at the wrong end of it.
Now you're name-dropping.
Exactly. Zara Sultana on Friday. What, she was speaking. I was at the meeting, 1,000 people present. I liked the presence of the young people. They were new to politics. They were interested in politics. But then she turned around and said...
Same ones that cancelled you, how many times?
She turned around and said, this is how the world is, you know. Everybody, I've been cancelled by everybody, don't worry about that.
Not by me, not yet.
Not yet.
Watch your step. I mean, I went to their meeting, the world transformed. So-called Jeremy Corbyn was on the platform.
I remember.
He was on the platform.
Yeah.
I went there, they weren't talking about the big issues. We put our hands up, they ignored us. We were the first people with our hands up. Then they turned around and said... Is anybody wants to say something?
He's not
My
hoping.
Hand was like that. That's no one else hand up. And then they said,
there he is. Yeah.
Are there any black people who want to speak? Any women who want to speak? Any young people who want to speak? Fuck off.
The next time,
fuck off.
Defending Israel, you know which side to defend.
Fuck off.
The guy in front of me is holding the second flag. And he's got the pre-Palestine sign. But that is bullshit because he is 100% Jew himself. But he's pretending to be something else. What I'm telling you is, next time, when it comes to defending Israel, know who to defend because he's holding the second flag on his hand.
It's a Russian flag.
No, it's not a Russian flag. That is a Serbian flag. That is a Serbian flag, which he's holding in his hand. That is not the Russian flag. That is the Serbian flag, 100%.
The
next time when it comes to defending Israel, no, we start to defend.
Is that a Serbian or a Russian flag?
That is a Serbian flag.
Check it. Check it. Do your search now. Do your search now, or eat your words, my friend. Eat your words.
I was studying in Russia, and this is the Russian mosque with the
Moscow
symbol.
Flag is red at the top. Flag. It's exactly the same.
I live in Moscow, and this is the
Russian
flag. And it's my flag, it's his flag. Yeah. It's not mine, I don't agree with him. He's got his view, I got mine. He's waving his flag. In that case, I'll finish on this. At Speaker's Corner, we have defended conflictual views over decades. And I will always defend that. The conflictual views. I went down there yesterday to ask people, would they defend the Palestine action protesters? Because if you're not going to defend them, then all you're saying is we've got the right to our speech, and you don't have the right to yours.
Let me just,
which I don't believe in. I don't believe in that. One final point.
Just, well, it's like in 2020, all the people who would be on the TV all the time who used to say, well, I don't agree with what you say, but I'll die for your right to say it. Where the fuck were they then? They disappeared completely. I was shocked. That was a revelation of just how...
To reply to what Tyler was saying earlier on, this was where the escalation of all this madness came from, was when they turned around and said this idea... Fuck off. What's the matter with you? Look it up on the internet.
Did I say anything to you?
You were wrong. Russian, not Serbian.
I don't care.
How much else are you wrong about?
I don't care what it is.
How much else are you wrong about? Fuck off.
Good.
Go away. You're not wanted.
Go away. What's the matter? Why are you so obsessed?
I don't need to go away.
Believe in the flag. Let him believe what he wants to. Let him believe what he wants to.
Just saw him. All right. I don't want to fly. No, you're in England.
What about it? Right? You relax.
No, you relax.
You relax.
Don't you come up challenging me and getting more points. Don't be pointing at me. Don't be pointing at me.
So what?
So people are dying in my country.
So yeah.
And you're
right. Why are you going to your country?
I'm bloody proud of it.
Why don't you go over to your country?
He's crazy in Russia.
Because
I want
to. He's
crazy in Russia.
No, because I'm English.
He believes in them. You like Russia.
I don't know. Yes, what about all the people that fly Ukraine
flags? He wouldn't be holding the flag.
Why not? You can't touch me.
Don't fart. Don't
fart. Bro, leave it, bro.
No, I will not allow these people.
You won't allow
these people.
You can't stop us.
This is our country.
We're the worst. Where is Britain's flag?
We're at free speech. We have free speech.
Where is Britain's flag?
It's over there.
Where is it? Where is it?
There's the
Britain's flag. There.
We will have
the speech. People like you, like Russia.
If you like Russia, cowards, they go to Russia and fight for Russia. Tell me five reasons why you love Russia.
I have a friend of Russia.
Tell me five reasons why you love Russia.
Why reasons why you love Russia?
Why reasons why you love Russia?
Not everyone has to agree with you.
Why do
you have to agree with you?
Why do we have to agree with you? Why do people have to agree with you? Why does everyone have to agree with you? Why does everyone have to agree with you? Why can't you take opposing
views? Why
can't you?
What reason why do you love Russia? Why do you love this stupid Russia?
It doesn't justify anything to you.
Three men trying to overshadow me.
Why do you love Russia?
We're not interested in what you've got to say.
That's your agenda,
because you don't like Russia. You just like its society, arrogance and pride.
Right, I'm going to call a halt to this now. Thanks very much for that illustration of the intolerance of free speech.
Yes,
perfect.
We
absolutely
defend that.
How did
you
I
don't defend it, we defend it.
How
you
did
defend.
I exercise my free speech?
No.
You're using your speech to dominate other people for talking. Free speech is about allowing other people to have a point of view that you disagree with.
I disagree with you.
In fact, it's about defending the
right. Yeah, but you don't respect my rights.
No, no, defending the right of your opponent.
I don't respect Russia.
You don't respect the right of someone to support.
Let me help.
You don't support the right of someone to support Russia.
He's telling you how.
That's what it is. Free speech means you support the right of your opponent to give their point of view. You're saying they can't. That's what you're saying. I understand why you're angry.
You can't not
the countries at war.
You cannot
all the rest
brandish.
Of
it.
Why not? Why not?
Why
not?
Why not? Why not?
Why not? Why
not? Why
not? Why
not? Why not? Why
not?
Why
not?
Why not?
Why not? Why not? Why not? Why not? Why not? Why not? Why not? Why not? Why not?
Why not? Why not? Why not? Why not?
exactly.
This is the way
and
we work.
I'm exercising my free speech.
No, no, you're trying to stop.
You're using your speech to dominate.
Okay, when I'm trying to engage with you,
you're not trying to engage.
I said
you are trying to
stop.
Yeah, you're forcing your way.
But you're trying to
stop others.
You don't listen. Listen.
You're not listening to him.
You are engaging.
You've got two ears, one mouth. Listen to what he's saying.
We don't have to answer your questions. Because you don't know.
Go and talk about that.
Yeah, you don't know.
Get a platform over there. Go and see how many people come and listen to you.
And you brandish the flag of the terrorists.
You give your point of view. You don't just attack anyone else.
Yeah, but it doesn't go.
You give your point of view.
But you're not giving your point of view. That's your flag.
Because people like you.
Oh, right, I see. Here we go. I'm the person standing with the
flag. Because you're not engaging with me. You're not
engaging. I'm sorry.
Someone who thinks it's a Serbian flag.
You don't know what free speech is. I understand why. I understand why. You don't believe in free speech. You don't believe in free speech. You don't support free speech. You don't defend free speech. You're opposed to free speech.
Russia is the terrorist state.
So no hard cover.
I've just finished.
You have never seen Russia. You have never seen any single boy coming next to your house. And that's why you promote
it. What are you doing here then?
What do you mean?
I'm flying
from the wall.
I am a physicist.
You live here, right?
Yes, exactly.
You haven't volunteered
and I support
to go
Britain. I support Britain. I support British values. Are you Christian yourself?
Yes.
Are you Christian?
Yes.
And you support terrorism?
No.
Yes, you do.
Ukraine is a terrorist.
How?
Zelensky.
Because it's
he bans the Russian Orthodox Church. He bans the Ukraine Orthodox Church. He bans political.
We're not allowed to agree with you.
Are we?
No, I'm not allowed to agree with you.
That's right. That's right.
You can't explain your point.
No, you tell the truth. You said ask for five. You didn't give five. You didn't give five reasons to support Ukraine. You said why everybody else can stop saying what they're saying and agree with you.
The voice of reason.
The voice of reason. That's a Serbian. That's a Serbian.
Have you ever seen
from over there?
It's
a Serbian.
Russian flag. Look at that. Let me show you the Serbian flag.
So you don't know the difference?
No, I do know the difference. Thank you.
So different.
No, I do know the difference. I do know the difference.
Is that Serbian or Russian?
Let me show you.
Is it Serbian or Russian?
Are you going to let me talk?
Is it Serbian or Russian?
I'm going to show you.
You said it was Serbian.
Look, look here.
Is it Serbian or Russian?
Look here, my friend. Look here. Look this. Look that.
Yeah, they banned Serbia and Russia, same shit, man. You might think they're the same shit.
You're
talking nonsense. And you came here behaving violently. You tried to stop free speech. You tried to stop
genocide to people. Russia and Serbia committed genocide to innocent people. No, they need to shut up.
Yes, shut up. You're not, you don't participate, you don't believe in free speech.
I believe in free speech.
Ignorant, narrow-minded idiot.
You've never been in free speech as much as much as I do.
Right, yeah, yes. Yeah.
Well,
you came in here to stop it.
No.
You came in here to stop it.
That's not why I come in here.
You did.
No.
And to cause violence.
No.
That's what you came
in. No, that's not what I come here
for. That's what you did. It's on video, mate. That's what you did. It's on video. He's on video.
We're
live stream. Live stream. So don't talk
shit to me. Thank you. Well, you see, now you're getting angry. You're getting angry.
No, I'm describing what you did.
You're getting angry.
Because I don't like intolerant, ignorant pigs.
That one, because you're going to the Serbian flag, you want to the Serbian flag.
What?
Go and put this flag.
What about the Serbian flag? What about the Serbian flag?
You couldn't tell. You mean you couldn't tell the difference? You couldn't tell the difference.
I can't tell the difference.
What about Stefan Bandera? Who's that? Oh, you don't know.
Have you been to Harkins?
Yeah, thanks, man.
No, the Harkins.
Have you been to
Harkins? Yeah, 2.3 million. They all speak Russian.
No.